it feels as if that experience of all those other things in the end brought me back to my path. But it brought me back as a changed person, freer person in the way that I felt and could express myself in life and in music. And for that, I feel very, very fortunate. So if someone will come today and say, Miloš, we'll take away those years, you will just continue where you were, I would say, please don't, because it was such an important moment of my personal growth.
That's Miloš Karadoglić. He's a guitarist from Montenegro. He calls London home these days. His star rose very quickly after the release of his debut album in 2011. 5 years later, he was faced with the possibility of never being able to play his guitar again. That's the story you'll hear this week on New Classical Tracks, and how one of the results is a new recording. It's called Sound of Silence. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm talking with Miloš about his newest recording, Sound of Silence. And the title of this recording isn't just the name of a Simon and Garfunkel arrangement that appears on it, but obviously it holds much more significance for you. And I'd really like for you to share the story of, well, I guess maybe the best way to describe it is kind of the burnout that you experienced that almost silenced your voice on the guitar.
Yes, it's been a very intense time. It's a very important time for me and for my artistic journey and for my personal journey, because for the first time in my life, I faced something like that. I've played guitar ever since I was 8 years old, and I was on this very singular and very direct trajectory. And it just happened that I felt very tired, and my hand was feeling very tired, and I had to stop. And it was as if my body was telling me that I had to stop because I had to take care of everything else. And when you are going from one concert to another, from one continent to another, from one recording studio to another, it takes a lot of energy out of you. And I, as anyone in my position would, I wanted to make the most of it. And I didn't really know my limitations. I felt that just through single-mindedness, goodwill, and incredibly hard work that I could pull through almost anything. And when I started to feel that it was difficult to play, I didn't really know what struck me. It was very, very shocking, and that kind of kicked me sideways. But finding the answers to what the problem really was, whether it was an injury or a burnout or whatever it was, it was very confusing, because every day that passed brought you further away from that source, and the fear from not being able to play again became bigger and bigger. And that makes you fall into some very, very deep depths of darkness. But what it also does, it opens up a completely different world, a world of free time, of friendships, of life that is not something we are used to as musicians, because we are always so dedicated and focused on just doing one thing. And now, on reflection, because I've been playing lots of concerts in the last 18 months, and this all feels very far away already, but it feels as if that experience of all those other things in the end brought me back to my path. But it brought me back as a changed person, as a richer person, as a much more adaptable, less judgmental, and freer person in the way that I felt and could express myself in life and in music. And for that, I feel very, very fortunate. So if someone will come today and say, Miloš, we'll take away those years, you will just continue where you were, I would say, please don't, because it was such an important moment of my personal growth.
I know you're determined to share your story so that maybe others can benefit from your experience. How are you doing that?
I'm very, very open about what happened, because I feel that there is too much stigma and shame associated, perhaps, It's a very strong word, but in a way it is. It feels like that when it comes to musicians' injuries and not being able to do something. Because, I mean, in our training as musicians, it's kind of masochistic, you know? It's kind of like, if it hurts, try harder, it will disappear. If it's not coming out, try harder, it will come. If you play the bad concert, you haven't practiced enough, even though you've practiced 7 hours a day. And we don't have to, on the other side of that process, we don't have physical therapists, we don't have any of that support mechanism that, for example, athletes have, or, you know, people in different jobs. And we are kind of left alone in that. And when something goes wrong, we have to suffer in silence. And I just thought that's not fair. And I thought that if someone who's enjoyed success and everything like I did, and if I talk about it, then maybe people who are experiencing it in silence will be able to come forward and actually start talking about it. And maybe if we talk about it, we will be able to find solutions which are not really out there. So I'm very vocal about it, and I associate myself with a lot of charities and places where people are able to come forward and talk about it. I talk about it with my colleagues, and I'm always surprised and amazed how many of my colleagues who are top musicians have at some point experienced exactly the same thing or a different sort of thing, but in the same vein in their lives and in their careers, and how personal and different everyone's solution to that experience is. So talking about it, why not? It's part of who we are. It's part of what becomes our music after that. And it's all part of life.
Well, and I think another important point is you spent 2 years looking for a solution with some misdiagnoses in the process that was almost leading you down the path of despair.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were moments when I just didn't know what to do next. But I think I was saved by being a very stubborn person. And I felt that only I really know what's happening inside myself, but I'm just not yet aware of it. And Western medicine is very black and white. It doesn't treat the cause, it always treats the symptom. And I really believe that we are not machines. And if you're injured or if something is broken, needs to be fixed. Yeah, I mean, if you break a bone, of course, it needs to be fixed and it needs to be skillfully fixed and done. But things are more subtle than that. And it's enough for one small little thing to maybe even emotionally go wrong that it throws the whole balance of your whole life out of its tracks. And I just found that really, really fascinating as I was going through it myself. But as I said, what saved me really was this sort of incredible determination that I was going to play again. And no matter what people were saying, I just didn't believe them, because I don't believe in these sort of phantom diseases or illnesses or anything like that, because I just believe that you can do your best and give it your all. And it has to work, because if you're keeping no reserve for it not to work, if you face your fears, then you will find a way out.
So what changes have you made in your life that now is allowing you to be back on tour and to make your music?
The main change that happened was in my attitude to things, because I became a much more relaxed person. I became a much more accepting person, and I just stopped taking myself as seriously as I used to. Because I feel as musicians, we are given this incredible gift that we can share with the world. And if we are constantly putting pressure on it and making it and suffocating it by this relentless ambition and fatigue and superficiality, then there isn't very much left for the music and for the art. And my focus now is exactly there. And it's the biggest change that I have made. And as a result of that, I've been able to play even more and better and in a much more focused and intense way, and to also notice the change when I play now than to maybe 3 years ago, of how people feel it even more directly and more intensely than before. And that's something that is priceless and something that makes all those months of suffering worthwhile.
Another very positive thing that's come out of this experience for you is your new recording, Sound of Silence. And you really took a lot of care in selecting the repertoire and spent a lot of time with yourself and others in choosing it. Is that right?
Yes. I wanted that album to be the reflection of the musical exploration that I enjoyed during the time of not being able to play myself. Because when I wasn't touring, I was for the first time really at home, and I could see a lot of friends and family and people, and I was surrounded by people, and it is pretty much thanks to all the wonderful people in my life that I had recovered. And we were always listening to music. We were always sitting around the table, eating wonderful food, drinking wonderful wine, and enjoying music, because that's just always been part of my DNA. And also hearing what music rocks the boat of another person who doesn't come from a classical tradition or who doesn't have any musical education just meant a lot to me, because I understood how they feel things and how it works for each and every one of those friends. And on this album, I wanted to make a personal collection, like a personal playlist of songs that have marked that period, and to see how far you can go in terms of genre and style and how far you can challenge it by bringing it into your own world. And the one thing that I love the most about the guitar, and the reason why I love guitar so much and I'm every day inspired by it, is because it's just so comfortably sits there between all those different genres and different ideas. And without ever losing yourself, you are able to find a way in a song. As a process, it's of course a much more complicated process than going into a studio and saying, okay, I'm going to record an album of Bach, because I know how to play Bach, and I know that for an album of Bach, I need to sit in my practice room for 2 months and get it absolutely how I want it to be, go in front of the microphone, and it's done. For an album like The Sound of Silence or the Beatles album, which I had before this one, you start from zero. You identify the songs that you like, but you start from zero, because creating something that is new and that sounds completely different to anything else is a much, much tougher process. But it's also a very rewarding process artistically and musically, and it opens the door to not just different kind of music making, but also to collaboration and to sharing the musical energy and dynamic of other people, of your producer, of your arrangers, of the guests you are inviting to join you on a particular track. And The Sound of Silence really, really celebrates all that diversity. And that's why on the album you have some really core guitar pieces, which it represents my core as a very, very classical artist, like the Tarega pieces or the Brouwer piece. But then there is even Moody Blues on the album. There is even Radiohead on the album. Of course, Paul Simon, Leonard Cohen. And why not? Music is just music, and it's out there for everyone to enjoy.
So you said it's when you started putting this together, it was a blank slate. Where did you start? What was the first piece that you knew, okay, here's where this idea is coming from?
It was The Sound of Silence, I think. Because that was such a meaningful and personal song at that time. And I heard this incredible version of that song on one of the playlists on Spotify. And it was for an a cappella choir. And I thought it had incredible atmosphere, and it spoke to me very directly. And I just thought, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to do something with this? And then it went further. It just planted the seed of an idea, which I then just allowed to grow.
One of my favorites on this recording is The Book of Love by The Magnetic Fields. It felt like it just kind of...
I don't know what it is about that song. It's like a lot of people love that song. I mean, it's a favorite song of one of my close friends. And I didn't know it from before. But it's not the first time I hear this, because I always think of it, out of all the pieces on the album, is the one that is the most sort of under the radar for me. But I love to hear why you love that song.
Well, as I was just listening to the recording, it literally, the melody just kind of rose to the top. The recording overall is sort of atmospheric to my ear. And then when I heard that melody, it was just like, oh, let me turn that up. That's the only way I can describe it, was it just felt familiar and comfort. It was like a sense of comfort to me.
It's like a warm blanket. Yes, I agree. Yeah. It's a very, very nice, intimate arrangement.
I also felt very similar about the Leonard Cohen piece, Famous Blue Raincoat.
Oh, don't make me get started on that one. I think that's just heartbreaking.
Well, I do want you to get started. Go, tell me more about it.
I just think that there's something about Leonard Cohen that is so transcendental. I don't know, it's incredible.
Well, and it also felt like it might be sort of a tribute to this composer too, Leonard Cohen having just passed away recently.
Yeah, because that also happened in that time, and I was always a fan of his music and his storytelling. And then I was thinking, how can I tell the story of that song without actually saying the words? Result is on the CD, and I just every time I hear that song, I kind of get all teary because it's so incredibly deep. And I just think that the way we worked on that song and the arrangement and everything, just it feels very, very deeply personal and very emotional.
I have to say, I would never have thought about putting the Moody Blues Nights in White Satin on a recording like this. What drew you to this piece?
It was a combination of things, because on that piece, I'm collaborating with Manu Del Lago, who plays this very unusual Swiss-Austrian instrument called hang. And it's a percussion instrument, and it has this incredible sound. And he's carved an amazing career for it, and I always wanted to work with him. But Moody Blues and Nights in White Satin, in my mind, I had this really, really, really cheesy MTV music video. Somebody covered that song in the 80s or early 90s, and it was like this very, very sort of cheesy thing. But it was a favorite song of one of my very good friends, and we were having dinner, and he said, oh God, I love this song. And I was like, oh God. And then we heard, and then I realized, actually, if you look below the surface, harmonically, it's such a beautiful piece of music, actually. And I put it out there as a sort of a wild card, and I thought, okay, maybe there is a way with this. And then when I spoke to the arranger that I worked with on it, and it was like, yeah, let's try it. And then even on the first draft, I thought it was going to be a winner. And I was also really, really surprised by that. I just love that arrangement. But I agree, it's really out there. I think it's the one that goes the furthest away from the classical, but I think somehow we managed to make it all sound like one thing, just like music.
Over the Rainbow is a lovely way to wrap up.
Over the Rainbow is this beautiful arrangement of a Japanese composer, Toru Takemitsu. And of course, Over the Rainbow as a song is one of the most iconic and loved songs of all time. And these arrangements of Takemitsu, it's one book where he collected the iconic, wonderful songs from the Western culture, and he arranged them in his very particular style. And I've never played this one before, this song. But when I started to feel stronger and when my fingers were really with me, I was going through pieces in my library and just thinking, you know, of the next stage and repertoire and so on. And I just started playing that piece and hearing and feeling those harmonies, and I totally and utterly fell in love with it. I just felt that this song in itself has such a beautiful message, and it's one of the favorites of so many people, but also the way that Takemitsu treats it and deals with it, with adding those very interesting harmonies. I have to say, took the liberty of putting in some things myself and making it feel right for me even more, and whenever that comes up, if I'm listening to it at home or anything, I just really like the atmosphere it creates, and it really has a very deeply personal meaning. I play it in concerts as an encore very, very often, and it's always amazing how people react to it. And some people cry, some people smile, some people whistle out of the concert hall after it. It's a great piece.
Miloš Karadoglić sharing a very personal playlist about a very personal journey. Thank you to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks. If you're enjoying this podcast, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker.